Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
Hello, football friends. This is Darren Hayes of Pigskin Dispatch. You know, it's time to just sit back, get that comfortable chair, put your feet up a little bit, and it's time to talk and soak in some good football history and learn a little something, have a little bit of fun. Timothy P. Brown of Football Archaeology joins us, as he does every Tuesday, to talk about a piece that he's written about some archaeological dig that he's done for football. Tim, welcome back to the Pig Pen.
Hey, Darren. Good to see you again. And I'm hoping this is, we're going to talk about a story where one school, brushes away the other a little bit.
Yeah, this is always a fun school when you talk about these schools that were, once upon a time were sort of more considered the powerhouses, the major schools, maybe not so much today. But this is a story you wrote about Colgate in Illinois and a 1916 intersectionality of the game in your tidbit. What can you tell us about this, Tim?
Yeah, so this is one where I think it's just so interesting to me sometimes how transportation technology has changed the game. I've got a bunch of different articles out there about, teams and their itineraries taking a train trip across the country or the first ones to travel by plane and things like that. And, it's just one of those deals where schools just teams didn't travel very far. We think of like the Big Ten, Rutgers to the West Coast, right? That's just one conference. And even though that's hard on players or on athletes more generally, it's still just 3-4 hours flight, right? So, but back in the day, teams just did not travel much. And so intersectional games were rare. And so just, we're talking Illinois and Colgate. Let's cover Illinois first. Bob Zupke becomes the coach at Illinois in 1913. He goes 4-2-1, then 7-0, sharing a retroactive national title, and then 5-0-2 in his first 3 years. And then they open the 1916 season with a 30-0 win over Kansas. So that meant that, going into the second game of the season in 1916, they hadn't lost since 1913, right? So not a bad record.
Right.
Illinois, up to that point, Colgate was only going to be the third Eastern team that they played. They played Syracuse in 1909 and 1910, home and away. And then they played Carlisle in 1897, 1898. Both games in Chicago. Colgate, on the other hand, they were a winning program at the time. The previous year, they'd beaten Army and Yale, which was, considered, big deal. But they also hadn't traveled much. So they had played Carnegie Tech in Pittsburgh in 1909, and they had hosted Ohio Wesleyan in 1914. So other than that, they had never played another intersectional game, and I'm assuming playing Navy or something like that was not, so Mid-Atlantic, Northern Mid-Atlantic and New England was kind of the teams they played. Plus you got the contrast, Illinois at the time, state land grant institution, 5,000 students. Colgate's a little, originally it was a Baptist school, but, non-sectarian by then, only, 700 or 575 students, all male on the other hand. So Colgate starts the 16th season. They beat Susquehanna and Maine. And Illinois had this guy named Ralph Jones scout the Maine game. Now, Ralph Jones isn't known to everybody, but he won. He was an assistant football coach. He also won the national championship in basketball in 1915, coaching Illinois. He led the Chicago Bears to the 1932 NFL title. And he, along with Hallis and Clark Shaughnessy, invented the modern T formation. So, you know, this is a real, this guy knew his stuff, right? Even though he was primarily a basketball coach. And he claimed after scouting Colgate that they were better than anyone in the Midwest other than Minnesota. Minnesota, you know. So, anyways. And it's also the, it was the first intersectional game of the year across the nation. So, you know, it just got more newspaper coverage than you would think it would get. As it turned out, Colgate that year had three guys make Walter Camp's first team All-American team, their quarterback, and then two offensive tackles. So they had a pretty good offensive line. And they basically were just, they dominated. And they only won 15-3, but, you know, they still, for them to go out and beat Illinois, who 2 years, you know, was 7-0 the previous, you know, 7-0 and then 5-0-2, you know, that's pretty good football. And then they went on to an 8-1 season. I forget who they lost to. But, you know, it just, in so they were a really good Eastern team at the time. But then over the years, you know, I think their last game against a Big Ten team might have been in the 40s. But they were like, they went 3-5-1 against the Big Ten over that period. Then they went 24-37-1 against future Big Ten teams because they – they had a long series with Michigan State, long series with Penn State, Rutgers. They played for a long time. And then they played in Nebraska, you know, once or twice. So, you know, they still were, could be competitive, you know, through, you know, maybe through the 70s, you know. But by that point, they were definitely tailing off in terms of, they just didn't have the manpower. So anyways, I mean, so it's one of those things where, you know, back then, the big schools weren't that big. And if a small school really wanted to have a pretty good football team, they could do it. And they could be competitive with anyone. And so the funny thing was that, you know, when I wrote this article, which I guess I put it up February 2nd, so not too long after the national championship, you know, occurred, you know, I was just thinking about, you know, in just the past couple of years, and especially this past year, you know, small schools have kind of faded, but now it seems like they're maybe making a little bit of comeback in the NIL era. If you have one alum who's really willing to dump some money in, or enough wealthy alums who want to put some money in, then you can do some. So just, you know, in the past year or two, Duke, Tulane, SMU, and Vandy have all been pretty darn good football programs, and none of those are big schools. You know, I mean, like USC is private, but they've got like 25 or 30,000 students, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas these are all schools, 7,000-8,000 undergrads, you know, something like that. So, and you know, I may have the numbers off for somebody, you know, but none of them are really big schools, but they're, you know, they've one way or another got the resources to put together some pretty good teams, at least in the past year or two. So we'll see how long that, you know, stays true.
Yeah, and we see with the NIL money how it can change a school's fortune instantly. I mean, look at Indiana. You know, yeah. 2 years ago they were doormats, and the last 2 years they're powerhouse and they're national champions now, right?
Yeah.
Now.
So, yeah, yeah. I mean, Indiana is just an incredible, you know, case. But you know, I actually I get a bigger kick out of, even if they don't win it, I get a bigger kick out of like the Duke, Tulane, SMU, Vandy. You know, those kinds of people. Yeah, just because it's a tougher pull, you know, for them.
Yeah, Vandy was especially fun watching their SEC games as they're, you know, competing against these, you know, monsters of the SEC and giving them some trouble. You know, that was fun to watch.
Yeah, and as long as, you know, if your team's in a lesser conference, you know, if you're the best of the conference, you know, you're going to have a shot, right?
Right, right.
And so, and you know, that's why they, you know, so I put the pants on, you know.
Yeah, you got to play those games. It's not one on paper, that's for sure. Yeah. Well, that's a great story. And again, this is one of those things that, you know, time has forgotten. And, you know, these players, you know, like Bob Zupke, or the players and the coaches like Bob Zupke, and that maybe don't get the recognition. Zupke, you know, gets recognition because of Red Grange, of course. But, you know, beyond that, people don't know much about Zupke and the success he had, especially as a younger coach. And you know, this is a great way to show the light of what he did and what Colgate was doing back in the day. And just a great era of football and a lot of fun. And you do this in your tidbits quite a bit. You bring us back into history, make us appreciate it, and recognize, you know, how the game evolved from it, and you know, or just an interesting, fascinating story like this. How can people take in some of your tidbits?
Sure, just go to footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack site, so just you can subscribe, in which case you'll get an email every time I send out a new story, and you know, the story will be in the email. Otherwise, you know, bookmark the site and just go out and visit whenever you want. You can also follow, you know, my Substack within the Substack environment, in which case you won't get the email, but you know, it'll come up in your reading list, you know, as long as you use the app on a regular basis.
All right, well, Tim, we love the way you preserve the history of the gridiron, and appreciate what you do, and love to talk to you next week about another amazing story you wrote.
Very good, look forward to it.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.